Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Moving side to side. And roll to your right side, please, and make a pillow with the hands. Stacking the shoulders and the hips on top of each other. Take a moment to pause. Allow yourself to be in your body. Present and alert.
Perhaps this sounds familiar. The chances are someone somewhere near you is teaching yoga.
Slowly come up to sitting, please. Take your time. Palms upwards, thumb and first fingertip touching.
From hot yoga and vinyasa to puppy and even beer yoga, there is something for everyone. Worth $100 billion a year globally, the yoga industry is big business. But is all this choice distorting and destroying the true meaning of yoga, a practice with deep spiritual roots? I'm Geeta Pensay, and in this documentary for the BBC World Service, I'm meeting the South Asian yoga teachers reclaiming how yoga is taught in the West, questioning their own part in balancing business with their religious and cultural heritage, sometimes receiving backlash.
When that first episode came out, we had a lot of racist vitriol come at us, but maybe 100 times that was positive encouragement and feedback saying, this is the message I've been waiting to hear.
I'm in Nottingham, a city right in the heart of England. And I'm here because alongside my day job as a journalist, I trained as a yoga teacher here. Growing up in a Hindu family, I was always aware that yoga stemmed back to ancient Indian philosophy. It's a Sanskrit word which means to yoke or unite with the divine. Yet getting on a mat and stretching is often the only way yoga is packaged, and it's left me feeling confused about how to teach yoga in the UK while staying connected to my Hindu roots. And I'm not the only one. I'm here to meet my own yoga teacher, Jasminder Bahia, who is going through a huge period of questioning and transformation.
Hello.
Hi, Geeta. Come in, come in.
Thank you. It's looking very different, very empty. What's been going on?
So we're taking a little bit of time to pause yoga classes, in-person sessions, and thinking about how we have a community space.
It's been a few months since I last saw Jasminder, and this now empty yoga studio is a stark reminder of the changes she's undergone. After 2 decades of teaching, she's taking a much-needed step back to reflect on her role in the industry.
I've actually had up to 28 mats in here, believe it or not. So just literally right next to each other, facing inwards, and then you could be also facing the windows, and the teacher could be right by the fireplace, and then you'd be leading your asana practice, mantra, you know, like kind of yoga nidra, And so,
as I walk alongside Jasminda through her once vibrant studio, the emptiness feels almost eerie. The bolster and yoga blocks, once tools of transformation, now lie dormant. I can't help but wonder what has led her to this decision.
I just think that we've just done, everything's been overmarketed with yoga now. So it's almost like the word yoga has become an add-on to things like yoga brunch, yoga lunch, yoga, you name it. And but it's so nice being in the space here, because it's still got that sense of warmth and space for reflection and reimagining what a space could look like.
Just as my own journey into yoga was deeply influenced by my personal experiences, I'm curious to learn what initially sparked Jasminda's passion for this ancient practice.
I've now thought about that, and actually I think it's been with me since a child, because my mum would have her mala beads and do the mantra and the chanting every morning. So we were a Sikh household and brought up with what we would call bhakti yoga, which is the devotional element of yoga. So all my life, really.
As the child of Sikh immigrants from the Punjab in India, Jasminda's childhood was a rich tapestry of cultural traditions and British life. Growing up in the UK during the 1970s and 1980s, she had to navigate the delicate balance between honouring her heritage and embracing life in Britain.
So I grew up in West Bromwich, glamorous West Bromwich. So I was born in West Bromwich, and then we moved around different areas within the West Midlands, and my parents would have first generation immigrants here. And so your identity and your culture in terms of belonging was just formed from the get-go. So that would mean going to the Gurdwara every Sunday without fail, and then just being part of the Sangat, the communities.
When did you decide to become a yoga teacher, to do the training and then eventually to train other teachers?
And I don't think I would have said at a young age, oh, I do yoga and we practice yoga. In fact, the word yoga wasn't really used. So when yoga came about, I started to study it really from the westernized perspective to understand. So it's almost like I was teaching a version or learning a version of something that was to be understood as a British-born person. So what is yoga? But it felt removed from my identity. It didn't feel a part of my identity and culture. And then it took me a long time to realise, oh, hang on, you've been doing yoga all your life. You know, you have the scriptures, you know, you're doing the mantra, you're sitting together, you're sitting on the floor every Sunday, and your mum is doing, I suppose you'd call it prayers, chanting.
It's fascinating to hear Jasminda reflect on these different versions of yoga in her life, both conscious and unconscious. And I can relate to this too, because whilst the popular image of yoga is a physical one, the Vedic scriptures, which underpin yogic philosophy, describe four paths to enlightenment. Karma Yoga, the yoga of action or service. Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge. Bhakti Yoga, or devotional yoga, and Raja Yoga, the yoga of meditation, which is regarded as the foundation of the modern physical practice. Whilst Jasminda didn't consciously recognise that she'd been practising Bhakti Yoga since childhood, she still felt a pull to India for her training.
I just thought, actually, intuitively, I need to be taught by an Indian school. So I did that in India, never with the idea of teaching yoga per se, but knowing that it made me feel great. And then I started to share it, and then felt very motivated to become a yoga teacher trainer.
When I first came across you, which was back in 2018, you had a really strong social media presence. And I remember looking at your videos, sometimes about, you know, different postures. You were a brand ambassador for a designer sportswear brand. And it felt like you were embracing the business of yoga.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's what you do. And I what I hadn't quite realized is I was really buying into the version of yoga that was sanitized, diluted, could be become a commodity. So it took me a while to realize, oh, actually, I'm part of the problem, that I was being involved in the whitewashing of yoga.
You're going on a journey even yes. now. Yeah. But I wonder, that kind of, like you said, trying not to pass judgment, but that sense when you, it's almost like you started to really question your own participation in this sense of yoga as a business, but also in the way it's being sold. What did that feel like for you?
Somebody who graduated with me, they sent me a message and said, oh, you'd be so proud of me. I brought my new yoga leggings and top. And that's when I thought, oh my gosh, that's what they think yoga is. I remembered really not having the confidence or the ability to say, hold on a minute, this feels uncomfortable, I can't do this. I just started to step away, but without communicating it, because I didn't know what I was trying to communicate. What was I trying to say?
It's clear just how important that spiritual connection is yeah. for you. And I guess a question would be, with that in mind, and with some of the struggles you've had with the industry, which ultimately, you know, you're profiting from in some shape because you're running a business.
Yes.
Have you ever been tempted just to leave it and to have a spiritual offering that is not monetary?
That's a really good question, actually. I think I'm kind of, am I in that phase at this moment? It's not a mandir, it's not a temple, it's not a godwara. So we are offering yoga outside of the spiritual places. So I think this is a bit of the juxtaposition. And so what does yoga mean to people? Because if you're going to the godwara, there's no fee. You're not paying for anything. And this is where it comes back to the, what are we monetizing and why are we monetizing it? What I'm trying to do at this stage is, the people who've graduated with us who have become yoga teachers, is to set up something that's community focused, could be a community interest company. And we need to make an honest living. We need to live well, and we want to do something that feels honorable. And I think it's really important that we have more black and brown bodies owning and claiming the spaces.
You're listening to the documentary on the BBC World Service.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
I'm Geeta Pensay, and I'm meeting the South Asian yoga teachers who are reclaiming the spiritual and cultural roots of yoga. I'm going to leave Jasminda for a moment because she's not the only one confronting how yoga is taught and packaged in the West.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tejal.
And I'm Jaisal.
And this is Yoga Is Dead.
We're two Indian American yoga teachers navigating the weird and tricky world of yoga.
Get ready to hear our personal stories, thoughts, and research on who killed yoga. Grab some chai, a tall, comfortable seat, and let's go.
So, white women killed yoga. That's our episode today. Now, before we get into it, disclaimer, we want to acknowledge that this topic is going to be difficult for a lot of you listening. If you're white, You might hear a stereotype.
This, as you've probably realised, is a podcast episode, and it doesn't pull any punches. So why did these Indian American yoga teachers decide to produce a show entitled Yoga is Dead? I've set up a Zoom chat with Dejal Patel, one of the hosts who lives in California.
What made me and my podcast co-host, Jaisal Parikh, decide to do that is I started to have these experiences that really felt like racist. They really felt like othering was showing up in the space, that people weren't addressing the power, hierarchy, and privilege that they held as studio owners, as lead teachers or lead teacher trainers.
Dejal, who is in her early 40s, describes a particular incident during her teacher training that sparked one of the episodes.
We were in a very small teacher training, and in that training, the lead trainer said to me a number of times that what I was offering about yoga was wrong. My information about yoga was wrong, specifically the way I was pronouncing the word Utkatasana or chair pose, because I would flip between Utkatasana and Utkatasana. And they told me there's only one way to say it. And so you're saying it wrong when you say it without the final A. And I just found that to be really shocking to hear as someone who comes from an Indian upbringing and background, is familiar with the language their whole life, and has also had at that point studied in India for their 300-hour teacher training.
It's interesting, on the first episode that you decided to entitle it White Women Killed Yoga, because, you know, it is quite provocative. There will be people who feel quite upset at the idea of singling out a particular ethnic group.
White Women Killed Yoga continues to be such an inflammatory statement. And it shines a light on the hypocrisy of how we might stereotype other cultures and not think twice about it.
Do you think this is a yoga-specific issue that you're facing, or is it actually something about kind of the wider society in which you live in America?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's what we wanted to address is what we knew and what we felt we could speak to from personal experience within our lived experience in yoga. That's not to say it doesn't happen to us outside of yoga as well. These issues of harm, racism and othering, microaggressions, which we should just call racial aggressions.
Despite her deep concerns around racism and privilege in the yoga industry, Dejal is still running an online business which offers yoga classes and talks. What is perhaps distinct is the overt emphasis on spirituality. Dejal tells me how her Hindu upbringing has shaped her teaching.
When I was born in Detroit, and my parents had immigrated from India, from Gujarat, at various years in the late 60s and early 70s. And then I was born in the early 80s. And I grew up in a Hindu household. On the weekends, we would visit the Hindu temple and we would practice. On the weekends where we couldn't go to the Hindu temple, we have an altar set up in our home that we would pray at. And my dad would have these prayer sheets and he'd put them in those clear plastic, you know, protectors, sheet protectors, and he'd have multiple copies. So when I would have sleepovers, I would tell them, I'm going in to do this, you know, thing with my family. We're going to pray at the altar and you're welcome to come if you'd like and just have the experience. That's when I started to see yoga just in my life.
Now, years later, Dejal runs workshops for teachers about the use of terms like namaste or chanting om, so that they have a better understanding of their spiritual or cultural origins.
I do not want to see yoga ever fully divorced from its roots, so that it can be completely rebranded as something new and then sold into capitalism in a completely different way without any connection to this rich history and cultural tradition.
There's a term that I've heard you use before, spiritual bypassing. And I wondered, with that in mind, is that partly what you're trying to address by offering classes and sessions that so deliberately say spirituality as the name?
I think, yeah, that's a great way to look at it. It's not the most direct messaging to say, come here to avoid spiritual bypassing. But what we're saying is come here if you want to learn more about the yoga philosophy and practices, if you want to develop a more yogic mindset in how to live your life. And when we look at the way spiritual bypassing has infiltrated yoga practices and the yogic philosophy, we can see that the idea of bypassing is a really selective practice where we select what we want to participate in and we leave the other bits aside.
Do you think that yoga should be a more faith-based practice, or that, you know, teachers who do have a South Asian heritage should be reclaiming yoga?
I think both are true. And I wouldn't say faith-based, I would say spirituality-based. And why I say that is because yoga actually invites us into a practice where we start to think about our own existence as temporary and also recurring. So there is a philosophy in yoga that says your soul will be reincarnated, or your soul is persistent, but your body and your existence, you will be reincarnated over and over again until you learn the lessons that you need to learn, right? Until you become a person that is so enlightened that it's very clear you no longer need to go through this cycle. That is part of the yogic philosophy, as well as the invitation for everyone to practice yoga.
Back in Nottingham, and Jasminda and I have jumped on a tram which winds its way through the city centre to Hyacinth Green, a multicultural neighbourhood. It's where she's meeting some of her graduate teachers and where she's thinking about putting on community classes in the future.
Well, we're actually arriving now at the New Art Exchange, which is quite distinctive. It's like this big, giant, black kind of cube in a way, and this is where you're hoping you might do a bit more teaching.
Well, I'm wanting to, in terms of like accessible spaces, so that accessible for wheelchair users, have more space so that people can hear and see their teachers. So yeah, so community places.
As we wait for some of her former students to arrive, I wanted to know how she moved from questioning her role in the commercialization of yoga to now openly emphasizing the spiritual.
You talk about this change that started happening for you. Was there a turning point in, you know, the way that you'd kind of gone down a path with being a part of the business, being a brand ambassador, and then sort of saying, no, I don't want to do that?
I think a lot of that links into my mother's teachings, and then my mum actually not being well, palliative care stage, and then having to leave her often to go off and teach yoga. And then these layers of questioning coming to me, like kind of leaving my mum. And I think that's where it came more and more to the surface. This voice couldn't be quiet any longer, and in fact I didn't even realize that this voice existed and needed to be spoken. It's actually the teaching of the Bhagavad Gita while my mom was, you know, during the later stages of her life, and feeling, oh, actually I can't teach this any longer, because there's my mom, and my mom passed, and I was like, I'm not this robust person, I'm this person that's feeling weak and feeling sad and feeling lost and empty without my mother's presence. And so I started to distance myself a little bit from yoga then, but not really realizing, oh, actually that was the grieving process. I was grieving my mom. And I think a part of that is your identity changes when you have a mother and you don't have a mother, so the person that guides you spiritually and teaches you. And that actually meant leaving behind some of these layers and complexities of branding, business, numbers, and stepping into your being and knowing that idea of actually we're here for this time, and what's my purpose? What do I want to do with that? So that's why when I think of what I'm doing, it's like kind of passing the baton to the people who graduated with me.
It's deeply moving hearing Jasminda share how the passing of her mother was the catalyst for the changes that she's making. We take a pause here to welcome some of those graduate teachers who have come to meet Jasminda for a small community class. Amongst her graduates is Holly, a yoga teacher in her 20s. As someone who is not from a South Asian background, I'm curious to know how Holly feels about this emphasis on yoga's spiritual roots.
So I worked in a leisure centre and they were teaching yoga there, so that's how I first got into it.
How do you feel then about when you teach? Do you think you'll want to incorporate chanting? Do you feel comfortable doing that?
It has a lot of weight to me. So at first I felt a little bit nervous. I want to teach it how it should be taught.
And when you say that, what do you mean?
So how yoga originated, I really want to get that across to people rather than this, when it's all diluted and without those different concepts, not just a physical practice, but there's mantras and there's all these other philosophies, and that might take people's interest.
Whilst Holly clearly feels a responsibility to recognise yoga's spiritual roots, that might not be the case for everyone. So I wanted to ask Jasminda, is this emphasis on religious and cultural heritage rather than the physical potentially alienating? And does she believe only people from a South Asian background can teach yoga authentically?
I think that's a really important reflection. I think there needs to be, if you're teaching yoga and you're talking about the Hatha Yoga Pradipika, you're talking about the Bhagavad Gita, the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, these are South Asian practices. So you actually want to make sure that within the team, there is a South Asian person who has lived that experience and can share that with you, or that the teacher is devoted to the yoga and comes from a lineage. And the reclaiming is all our responsibility, all communities, all black, brown, white bodies.
Jasminda is looking to the future and still plans to run teacher training and meditation classes. She says she's happy to teach anyone who is open to learning. But throughout, there is one spiritual voice that guides her.
It's me and my mum. You know, we're saying that together. When I'm teaching philosophy, I'm teaching about my life, my mum's life, my ancestors, my heritage. So it has to be, sit with me comfortably. And you're kind of shedding these layers. You know, we think about the panchakosha, the layers of our being. So you're going from your physical, your pranayama body to your thinking, you know, manomaya and your wisdom body. And, you know, so there's these so many layers to our being. And I think when you don't have an understanding of those layers, how can you understand yoga? Yoga is then just become something to sell. It's a commodity that's outside of you. And then just realizing actually it's already inside of you, like it's always there and present. When you were talking to me about, oh, when did you first realize that you've been practicing yoga? And I've sometimes joked about this when people put it on their bios, on their websites. I was doing yoga in my mother's womb, but I was.
This edition of Heart and Soul was presented and produced by me, Geeta Pense, co-produced by Linda Walker, and the editor was Rajiv Gupta.
This podcast is brought to you by Wise, the app that helps you manage your money internationally. With Wise, you have up to 40 currencies at your fingertips. You can receive money, pay bills, and send money across borders without hidden fees. You always get the real-time mid-market exchange rate. See exactly what you pay every time. Join millions of Wise customers worldwide. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. T's and C's apply.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI,
Aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for People.